This is the March to the Arch podcast, your place for Missouri Valley Conference news, talk, and takes.
Hey, Valley fans, you're listening to the March to the Arch podcast. Is your team going to win? Make some noise!
Welcome to episode 18 of the March to the Arch podcast in this 2021-2022 Missouri Valley Conference season. We've got an awesome episode. We're going to talk news. We're going to talk Murray. We're going to talk with Murray's AD. And you know what? We're going to recap all the games and look ahead to next week's Missouri Valley Conference games. But as always, before we get to that, how are we doing today, Baker?
We're doing good. Been watching some conference games, which obviously are fun, and you know how it is. Hey, how many episodes have we done, by the way, overall? Do you know?
Ooh, overall, I have no idea.
We gotta be like at the big 100. I mean, we probably missed it.
We definitely have probably already missed it. But hey, you know what? I'll take some homework back, Baker, and I'll come back with that total number.
Let's hear. I want to know what the total episode is of what we go into next week.
In those early seasons, not sure how good of accounting we were doing on keeping track of everything. And then the first season, it was kind of the wild, wild west in podcasting.
I mean, it was either you doing it or it wasn't getting done. let's just call a spade a spade, but no, things are good. Hey, we got to talk about it. Go ahead. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, I do. No, I want to set the stage of where we're at right now. Just in the grand scheme of things, it is halftime of the Wednesday night game. So we recorded on January 12th. So we're at halftime of our respective games. So we're like, hey, let's record a little bit, get some stuff out of the way, and then get dialed in to the second half. So I just kind of want to set the stage of where we're at. Both our teams playing pretty well right now. So
Birds are fighting.
Spirits are high right now. But yeah, hey, get into it, Baker.
Hey, Birds are fighting, down 44-42 at the half. So, I couldn't ask for more. Just keep playing hard. Haven't been playing. Hasn't had a lot of Redbird games lately. So happy that we have one right now.
But yeah, so a little bit of banter. Vance went to a actual movie at a movie theater this past weekend, and maybe to set the stage, Baker is a huge Marvel fan, like a midnight showing fan type fan. Right? Take it away a little bit, Baker.
So I think if you just said that like 5 or 6 years ago, I think that would have been the case. But now with the youngsters, midnight showings are not happening. But yes, I'm a big fan, obviously. I'm actually in the process of watching all the Marvel movies with my wife right now. So, but you got to finally go see Spider-Man, which is awesome. So I just want to, spoiler alert right now on the podcast, if you are intending to go see Spider-Man, do not listen to the next like 3 minutes of this podcast. All right. So you have 5 seconds, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right. You've been warned. If you get spoiled something, that's on you. How awesome was Spider-Man?
It was very good. I thought it was awesome. Just the whole concept of what they did of bringing the multiverses together. One, it's just crazy in this day and age of just corporate governance that the various film studios would allow this to happen. So I think that was the mind-boggling thing. So for me, I would say I got spoiled a little bit before I went there. But I thought it was just a cameo. Like, I thought Tobey Maguire was just going to be walking down the street.
So you had no idea that he was, like, a big part of the movie.
I had no idea. Like, wow. I saw something that was like, oh, cool. Like, I thought it was like, you know, RIP Stan Lee, one of those type things. But I didn't realize it was an integral part of the movie.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. Who was the best Spider-Man in the movie?
Tom Holland.
You thought Tom Holland was the best?
I did.
And then I thought Andrew Garfield stole the show.
So I need to maybe walk that back and say I'm not a huge comic book movie fan, so I don't know if I've seen the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans.
First one's good. Second one's it's tough. It's tough. Awesome movie. I think it was so cool how they brought back the villains and the old ones. We could go on for hours talking about this movie, but the moment though, like where they're all like together fighting, I mean, I thought that was just so cool. It's what we kind of all went into the movie thinking, like, if you're going into the Spider-Man movie thinking, you know, this is the expectation you wanted. Everybody's kind of always thinking, you know, are they going to bring back the old Spider-Mans? And they finally did. And it was like, they met the expectation and somehow still exceeded it at the same time. I mean, William Dafoe as Green Goblin was so good. I mean, everybody was awesome in this movie. Jamie Foxx, I mean, everybody killed it. So, awesome movie, highly. And no one listening to this at this point in the podcast is going to go see it after I just spoil it for them. But if you haven't seen it, highly recommend it. Great, fun movie.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
That's it for the spoils. You want to get into the news of the valley?
Yeah, news of the valley. I mean, we've got some official news we can talk about here with Murray State. But before we get into that, let's just go a little bit around the valley. There's a couple other newsworthy items. You know, the Rank Loyola effort is still alive and well. Unfortunately, the Ramblers are not in the top 25 as of right now. They are 28th. In KenPom right now, and I think, I mean, they're getting votes, they're getting significant votes. I think the top, as long as they keep winning, like, there's obviously a huge scare for Loyola last night that we'll get into, but I think it's gonna happen.
Two huge scares, I mean, two in a row.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I mean, in the net rankings, if we're gonna go there, they are in the top 25, they are 21. They've dropped a couple spots, but 21 in net, 28 in KenPom, just haven't cracked the top 25 rankings. So all things equal, I mean, they're a top 25 college basketball team. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It just takes sometimes it takes Valley schools a little longer to get there, but I think that they will here in the next couple weeks, as long as they keep up the play that they have. It's a well-deserved, and it'll be nice to see, you know, Valley games throughout the end of the year. It'll be nice to have that number next to Loyola, because it only brings the level of the league up. So,
absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Staying on the Loyola bandwagon, they have a significant home winning streak, which is pretty cool. They're at 30 games now, and it's the fourth longest in the NCAA behind Gonzaga, Liberty, and Houston, which I think is pretty cool, just in the grand league's landscape of the NCAA.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and hopefully, you know, once we get past, you know, COVID, obviously there's been a little bit of an uptick here. Hopefully, we get that building packed up again for Loyola fans, because even the last couple of games, just looking in the crowd, it hasn't been exactly, you know, a packed house. And I think that I think COVID probably has a lot to do with that. I know the restrictions in Chicago are tough, so hopefully, once we kind of open things up a little more, and hopefully we get past this part, but. We open things up a little more, and, you know, toward the end of the season, if they're still rolling in the conference title race, that place is packed. Because, I mean, even the last couple of years when they were good, you know, the Final Four run and some of those really good years they had, that's a small venue. But when that small venue is packed, it is a awesome environment for basketball.
I couldn't agree more, and I do think there's a lot of Chicago-ness going on and impacting the crowds. Last thing here, Baker, before we get into the Murray State news, the one stat that I think is really cool, and it's coming up in all the games, is of the 17 conference games so far played this year, 11 of them have been decided by one score or less, which, I mean, no doubt it's the most in the nation, but it is – insane to think of that stat and how just the parity.
Say that one more time.
17 games have been played, conference games have been played. Okay. 11 of them have been decided by one score or less. Sorry, by one score. Yeah.
That's crazy.
3 points or less, essentially. So isn't that insane?
I mean, it's insane, but like now that you said it and put it into context, I'm like, it kind of makes sense because we had a crazy start to the season, but wow, that's nuts. You'd think there'd be, you know, some 5 or 6 or 7 point wins in there, but that's crazy. 11. Wow. Yeah, the Valley's tough. Any team playing in the Valley. Our top dog found out this weekend.
Yep. And then the news of the day, awesome interview upcoming. So we're going to talk about it a little bit. And then we have an interview with the Murray State Athletic Director, Kevin Saul, as of Friday, January 7th, the Murray State Racers will join the Missouri Valley Conference for the 2022-2023 season. I mean, historic moment, 11th member school for that season. I mean, I watched the press conference, listened to a lot of the media calls. Obviously, we had a great conversation with Kevin, so keep hang on and listen to that. But, I mean, just general thoughts. We've known it's been coming. I mean, we've talked about it on podcasts in the past, but it's just good to feel official, right, Baker?
It's not official till it's official. And so, yeah, there was kind of a it was nice to see it happen, is I kind of to piggyback on what you said. But huge move by the Valley. I mean, Murray State, it's such a good fit. Like I was and I mentioned this to Kevin off air, but I when I was at the Illinois State Murray State game this past about a month ago, ran into Harry Schrader, good friend of the show, and he and I were talking at halftime, and we both talked about it, and it was like, this feels like a Missouri Valley Conference game when Murray State and Illinois State were playing. And it really did. It just kind of had that vibe of a league game. And so it feels like they fit. It feels like it just totally makes sense. They're one of the they're one of the more brand names in the mid-major Midwestern area. I mean, you know, some people may agree or disagree, but I mean, they've got an NBA player who's tearing it up right now, John Morant. People know who he is. They know he went to Murray State. And Murray State's been making tournaments within the past two decades, making tournaments, winning games in the tournament. So they're a name that, you know, people do know is kind of one of those Cinderella darlings. So just to associate that with the Missouri Valley is only going to help the profile. Their program, their men's basketball program has been rolling in the past, you know, 10 years or so. So I think this is a great addition to the Missouri Valley, and kudos to Jeff and his staff to be proactive, especially with the news of Loyola, still to be proactive to try to make the league as best he can for the next season. So I'm as happy as can be. Vance, you got any other thoughts on it?
No other thoughts. Good to have it official. Big thanks to the Valley staff to get this done. And as Valley fans, this is just an exciting time. We don't think expansion is over with for the Missouri Valley for this season or for next season. All indications are from just sources we have, but then also across the Missouri Valley fandom, media and fans, indications are there's another school that's going to come to the Valley.
Yeah, no. And it's, it's out there. We've been talking about them for a while. It's Illinois, Chicago. Well, we can might as well just talk about it. Cause I mean, it's been out there on Twitter everywhere you go. We've heard from some of our sources that things are kind of in play there, and hopefully over the next couple of weeks, something comes together. But, like we said earlier, nothing's for sure until it's for sure, as we've kind of said with the whole Murray State thing. So we've kind of danced around it a little bit because, things can change on a dime until things are signed and everything's approved by, whatever boards need to approve things. We don't want to jump the gun either. So, yep, but no, that makes a lot of sense. And it would definitely set the league up for a 12-team league, which is what we've been calling for a while now. So,
and I'll end with just the thought of Arch Madness in 2023. Not that I'm not excited about the 2022 Arch Madness, but just the thought of the 2023 Arch Madness. I'm already licking my chops to get to it.
I mean, hold on. Let's just call a spade a spade. Saluki fans getting ready for one of their rivals to be rolling into Arch Madness. Racers. I mean, Evansville as well, by the way. Those Evansville fans out there. I was even talking, we were talking to Kevin a little off air as well, and it was Southern Illinois and Evansville, two rivals coming into the league with two built-in rivals already. So I know you're over there, Vance. You're licking your chops for that first matchup.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's a Valley game.
I can't wait. I just am so ecstatic for that. What the atmosphere is going to be like. And like we've said, I've said multiple times on this podcast, Arch Madness has the best memories of my childhood. It's the reason I got into this podcast. So the thought that the atmosphere is going to get back to the mid-2000s, late 2010s, I mean, I'm ecstatic right now.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil it because Kevin actually brings it up about the atmosphere they brought into Evansville for the OVC tournament. And listen, Murray State fans, if you're sampling our podcast right now for the first time, we were expecting big things from y'all. We want to see you guys out in a big wave in St. Louis next year. So a lot to look forward to.
So without further ado, hang on and listen to the interview with the 11th member of the Missouri Valley Conference in the 2022-2023 season, Athletic Director for Murray State University, Kevin Saul.
All
right, Valley fans, you know good and well the last 24 hours have been great as the Missouri Valley Conference has added another school. The Murray State Racers are coming to the Valley officially, and we are excited to have Athletic Director for Murray State, Kevin Saul, with us to talk a little racer hoops and their move to the Missouri Valley Conference. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Well, we're doing great. Thank you so much for having us. John and Vance, we're excited to be a part of the Valley starting in July of 22 here, and certainly looking forward to all the new relationships and rivalries that will come with that new affiliation. So thanks for having us.
And we are excited to have you join the conference. You know, just maybe real quick, what has the last 24 hours been like for you, Kevin?
Well, the last 24 hours have been a whole lot of fun. In terms of, you know, yesterday we held a public community celebration and had several hundred of our fans were in the CFSB Center, and we welcomed Commissioner Jeff Jackson, along with our board chair, Eric Kriegler, and our president, Dr. Jackson, gave a brief presentation, showed many of the videos that we showed throughout the process with the Missouri Valley Conference, and then hosted a media engagement as well, a press conference. And so the last 24 hours have been a whole lot of fun. The last 3 months have been a lot of work and preparation by many, many folks to position Murray State in a very, very good position as we transition forward now.
Absolutely. So, you know, it was awesome to watch the press conference and listen in to the media event. So let's maybe go back past the 24 hours. You know, Murray has been one of those schools that have always been top of mind for Valley fans as we talk expansion, as we lose teams and add teams. You know, what maybe made this one a little bit different?
You know, it's a good question. It's one that we've talked about internally, and it's certainly one that we fielded in the media engagement as well. Is I know that there were some discussions back in 2017, and you know, whether you look at that as an advantage or a disadvantage, neither President Jackson or I were in our current roles at that period of time, so not really equipped to speak to the level of detail there. What we can speak to is really going back to late September when we made an announcement publicly that we were looking at all options up to and including remaining in the Ohio Valley Conference, of which we've been a member for 74 years, but felt like we needed to honor our programs and our tradition and all the folks that have supported it over 74 years and make sure that we're positioned in the right spot. And so that began late September. I would tell you that the conversations were a firm pace, but a very mutually beneficial and a mutual engagement with the Missouri Valley Conference from early on. And so really that process became not only educating ourselves, right, putting together presentations and information that to exchange throughout the many months and weeks. And I learned a lot about Murray State and through this process. I've been here for 3 years. And so Dave and I spent a lot of time together along with our sports video staff and certainly engaged so many folks on the campus side to position ourselves in a good spot to ultimately present to the Missouri Valley Conference in December and find ourselves in a very, very good spot. So last Friday we had really culminated with a Board of Regents meeting, special Board of Regents meeting that we called on Friday the 7th. And so blessed and fortunate to be able to walk our Board of Regents through the elements of that presentation. I'm sure they learned a lot about our programs as well, all 15 of our programs, and got a unanimous vote. And I think that speaks to the collective commitment and visionary leadership of our Board of Regents in terms of where our university wants to go. And so the stars have aligned in just the right spot. There's been a lot of hard work, and I certainly appreciate Commissioner Jeff Jackson and his staff and commend them for helping to usher us through the process. It's our wants and needs were aligned very much so. So it was very mutual from the start.
Kevin, before we dive even further into, you know, the Valley Murray State synergy, because I mean, like we said before, it fits like a glove, Murray State and Missouri Valley, but just curious on from your perspective, and I've heard a few times from you and others that, you know, there were other options that you guys were kind of looking at, you know, maybe staying in the OVC? Were there other maybe conferences that you guys were looking into? This one feels like the right one, obviously, for your university, but were there other, you know, were there other ideas thrown out there? Had you been approached by any other leagues? Was there any other talk outside of the Missouri Valley?
Well, what I would say on that is I don't know at this point how relevant to get into great detail on that, other than to say that whether you're making a decision personally or professionally in your own lives, you're obviously going to look as comprehensively as you can at all the options. And that's certainly what we did. We spent a lot of time on that, but I can tell you very quickly, the conversations became mutual in terms of the interest with the Missouri Valley. And that's where we focused a majority of our attention throughout the process to make sure that, that we were making a great decision on both sides. And I think we have. I think this is one of those unique opportunities in life where both entities will improve one another. And so we both get better through that partnership, and certainly look forward to all the relationships to build throughout the new league.
Yeah, so I think Baker nailed it in the, it fits like a glove just from a conference landscape and perspective. And I know in the press conference, you're talking about some of just the demographics of Murray, you know, around your student athletes, where they come from, and then also your alumni base as well. You know, can you go into just some of the details on, you know, why the Missouri Valley made sense from Murray's perspective?
I would absolutely love to do that. We, when you look at the Missouri Valley Conference footprint, right, you've got Tennessee now with Belmont, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, and Iowa. 91% of our student body at Murray State comes from those states, those six states. And when you look at the alumni base, we have over 70,000 living alumni from Murray State University. 80% of those currently work and reside in those six states. So you're talking about 91% of your students and 80% of your alumni that now will be able to engage at an incredibly high level with Murray State Athletics in a new environment in the Missouri Valley Conference. So that was one of many, many opportunities where the alignment showed that this was the best option for us.
So I wanted to, one other thing I wanted to ask is, because another thing that you guys had talked about was the master plan. And I want to make sure I'm saying it right. You guys have had this master plan, and it, I think it got derailed a little bit because of COVID, at least pushed back a little bit because of COVID. But I'd love to hear you talk about a little bit about some of the facility work you guys are doing and a little bit of things around the university, because people listening to this podcast are going to start making the trip to Murray, Kentucky to come see some basketball games.
Sure. No, we appreciate that. So the facility master plan within athletics really falls underneath the overarching campus strategic plan. And that campus strategic plan includes a campus housing master plan in addition to an athletics master plan. And so we started, I was hired here in March of 2019 after 12 years at the University of Kentucky. And that summer of 2019, we engaged a pretty broad cross-section of the university community in an athletics facility master plan. That was a 14-month process. So we finished that late summer, early fall in 2020. As you all know, 2020 was a banner year in terms of pausing great plans and visions. And so when we finished that up and we received the final report in terms of what that could look like for us, we decided that maybe the most responsible thing to do would be to sit on that, because nobody was in a position to be talking about that a great deal when we were trying to figure out how to get into classrooms and whether we were going to be in person or virtual, and trying to manage the financial strain of COVID. And so we sat on that until the summer of 21 and actually started releasing week by week from August through November. We released each week a sport or specific facility plan. And that culminated into our football stadium and finally the CFSB Center, where both of our basketball programs play. The CFSB Center is a fantastic facility. It's 25 years old. It seats 8,600 in there. And my first week on the job here at Murray, we broke two attendance records. One was the regular season finale, And the other was the game against Belmont here at home. And that was Jaws' second year. And we were up over 9,000 for both. I think we got a little bit of a smack in the hand by the fire marshal. But we had just an absolutely packed place. And so when you look at the capacities of the facilities within the Missouri Valley Conference, we fit right in the middle there at 8,600. It's a great facility. It's got expandable bleachers on all four sides, both in the lower and the upper. They expand close to the floor, and so it's an incredibly loud place. But our facility master plan actually includes permanent lower bowl seating in the CFSB Center, as opposed to expandable bleachers in the sidelines and end zones. And what that does for us is actually increases capacity in the lower bowl. Pardon the grammar, but it gets us more better seats closer to the floor. And so we have that component. We want to, behind our benches, actually underneath that permanent lower bowl seating, is create a club level for premium food and beverage service up underneath for about 300 or 400 of the fans in the center there. And then as that relates to our basketball practice facility, the Gene Wells Ray practice facility, it's right on the other side of where that club level would be. And in between the practice facility, these facilities already exist: our training room, our weight room, the practice gym, and then the offices for men's and women's basketball surround the outside of that practice gym. What we want to do is make that transition between the CFSB Center and the Gene Wells Ray practice facility a continuous and seamless transition, so that when you come out of the practice gym, you've got a renovated weight room, training room, hydrotherapy, nutrition space. Across the hall is then your premium club space that's up underneath the seats. And then our student athletes would actually come out onto the floor from midcourt through the premium space, which would be a great interaction for our
family. That'd be awesome.
As opposed to coming down in the corner. So we've got great plans in the CFSB Center, and folks that are really excited about supporting that plan. So we look forward to pushing that forward in the year ahead.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. I've been to the CFSB Center multiple times for a lot of games. I've seen the Harlem Globetrotters there when I was little. So great facility, but with the master plan, even cooler what you're going to do with the lower bowl.
Well, Vance, we've got the Globetrotters here on February 2nd. You're more than welcome to come down and host as our guests, and we might even be able to get you out on the floor.
Yeah, my age, I think I'm out of the age demographic from the time I actually saw them, of who they're trying to get there. But I think it's a good transition. So obviously Belmont coming to the Valley. So you're bringing a former conference member with you to your new conference. But, you know, thinking rivalries within the Valley, any thoughts on what that first year could look like from a fan perspective, from a team perspective? Just kind of get your thoughts on the current Valley makeup and what you guys will bring to it.
Well, I can tell you this, our fans are going to be incredibly excited. We mentioned before we got on the podcast, one of our slides in the presentation was entitled Historical Matchups in the Missouri Valley Conference. So when you walk your way through what the membership will be in July, by July 1 of 2022, there's 141 historical basketball games that have taken place between the Racers and those institutions. The Racers record is 76-65, so it's 54%. So you can tell that there's a lot of back and forth in those rivalries as well, right? So that'll be really exciting for our fans. We're incredibly excited to continue the rivalry with Belmont, which has become a great, great rivalry for us guys. We one of the other slides that we used in our presentation is we talked about the Racer Nation and the Racer family and the following. If you go back to, let's just say, take the OVC championship in 2019, in March of 2019, the semifinal game brought a single game attendance of 8,294 fans. The final game against Belmont brought an attendance. So let me set the context here. So that semifinal game was an OVC single game post-season tournament record attendance. At 8,294. The very next night, as Murray State and Belmont squared off with each other, the attendance was 10,525.
That's awesome.
So not only did you set the record the first night, you went plus 25% the next night. and what an incredible environment. In fact, if you were to take those two single games and project them onto the Arch Madness single game attendances for the 18 and 19 postseason tournaments, they would be ranked 1 and 4 in those. So I'm excited. Our fans are excited about what Arch Madness will look like in the years to come, because our folks will travel and they're really excited about it.
Yeah. And just as a fan, and I know a lot, you know, I know Evansville, Southern Illinois, you've got some proximity schools that are going to be natural conference games that I think I could see you guys traveling well, and vice versa for a lot of Valley schools. And I think everyone's going to be gunning for that. Maybe it's like a Wednesday, Saturday, you know, drive to Murray, stay, then right on down to Nashville. Maybe, you know, if the scheduling can align a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. We are, you know, you can get from Murray to downtown Nashville in just under 2 hours. So it's really easy to get down there, and it's a lot of fun. I'm very hopeful that all the fan bases in the Valley will enjoy that swing as a part of the schedule.
Absolutely. Before we get to our last question, which obviously is near and dear to our heart, Vance will get to in a second, but I do want to ask one quick question. And I feel bad I didn't ask it earlier. I don't know if you can update us on this or not, if it's kind of ongoing. I know we do have some football fans listening to the podcast that are curious about Murray State football and where you guys will end up, and, you know, if and when that is going to be with the Missouri Valley football. Is there anything you can really shed on that? Is there any light you can bring to that?
I appreciate that question, John. We stated in, I think it was the second paragraph of our release, our initial release on Friday, tried to capture a little bit of where we stand from a football status perspective, and I'll see if I can expand on that. Early on in the process, we made it really clear from our perspective, our desire. You got to remember, we're the invitee, right? So you got to approach things the right way, but communicated our desire to work a parallel track. And I think what is something that our folks learned throughout the process is that the Missouri Valley Conference, the Missouri Valley Football Conference, are two totally separate entities. They have separate commissioners, they have separate bylaws and constitutions. And so first folks got to wrap their mind around that. So we had a desire to approach it in a parallel track, the membership discussion. And we learned through the process, and Commissioner Viverito has been awesome. She's been fantastic throughout the process, that was going to take a little bit more of a serial or linear track than it was a parallel track, because the invitation to the Missouri Valley Conference really needed to precede the process for the Missouri Valley Football Conference. So with that being said, the minute we received the invitation for the Missouri Valley Conference, we were incredibly excited, and we initiated that process with Commissioner Viverito on the Missouri Valley Football Conference. And she received direction, unanimous support from the presidents of the Missouri Valley Football Conference, that board of presidents, to initiate and participate in a membership discussion with Murray State University. It's been very positive, and certainly don't want to take anything for granted, but we're going to do our due diligence and tell the story. It's a great story to tell, and we look forward to that process with Commissioner Viverito and the board of presidents with the Missouri Valley Football Conference.
Thanks for that, Kevin. And, you know, back to hoops. So I want to take you, you know, let's fast forward a year. You're going to be on the floor at Arch Madness in St. Louis. And it's kind of a question, because I was not familiar with this, but, you know, what's it going to feel like, or what are you anticipating it feeling like when Murray State goes shoes up, which is the first time I heard about that in the press conference? What does that look like, you know, at Arch Madness? What is that going to be, 2023?
Well, if this was a video conference, or I would share my screen and I would show you what the Ford Center looked like for that final game. But we did a 360 video in there, and the blue and gold in that 10,500 crowd was really impressive. And I know this, that our fans, we wouldn't be where we are right now without our fans. And it is an incredible fan base. Very, very passionate about all of our programs, specifically our basketball program. When you look at the success in our previous home for 74 years. And you look at the postseason championships, Murray State's won 55% of them since 1980. We've been to the NCAA tournament 17 times. We have seen regular season championships, 27 of those. Again, 17 postseason championships, 17 selections. It is a remarkable fan base. It has been an absolute cradle of coaches throughout our history as well. And Murray is a very unique community in that there's very much a family feel to it. And it is one where if you listen to interviews, whether it's Mark Gottfried, Tavester Anderson, Mick Cronin, Billy Kennedy, Steve Prohm, or Matt McMahon, the community support is what makes Murray State so special. And it's also what creates the demand to be successful in basketball. And so that comes with it. And so you'll see and experience that at Arch Madness. And our fans are true basketball fans. I will tell you that for a very long time, as we initiate our season ticket renewals every year for basketball, there's a section on the renewal form for the postseason league tournament ticket. We pre-sell those. And in the past, we have sold more than all of our other conference peers combined on the pre-sale. And so folks commit to that. It's their vacation time. It's where they want to be. And so I think I'm hopeful that you will experience that great passion in Arch Madness as we approach it in March of 23.
There you have it, Valley fans, the 11th member in the 2022-2023 Missouri Valley Conference. We have Athletic Director for Murray State University, Kevin Saul. Thank you so much for coming and joining and sharing the Racer experience with the Valley fans. We can't wait for the year to come.
Thanks so much for having us, and go Racers.
All right, Valley fans, as with every episode, we talk about past games, and these are going to be games from January 6th to this evening, January 12th. So, Baker, take it away and kick off with Loyola versus San Francisco, the one non-con we get to talk about here.
Yeah, so set the stage a little bit. Hats off to both Loyola and San Francisco. Meeting in Salt Lake City at community college? And I don't have the name of it in front of me. I wish I did. Loyola and San Francisco, two teams who are having pretty good years on the mid-major front, and this was a cool boost of a game. And end of day, either way, if you win or lose this game, it's still going to help your net ranking by playing this game for both of these teams. But Loyola Valley School comes out on top, 79-74. This, to me, I don't have much to say because I barely got to see any of this game. And Vance, you can jump in if you have any other thoughts on it, because it was kind of a weird midday Thursday game. But Schweiger had a big game, 24 points off the bench for the Ramblers. And, you know, you could tell if you heard some of the interviews after the game from both coaches that, especially with Drew Valentine, he was very happy that he got a chance to finally get that back on the court after, you know, such a long hiatus. I mean, I think it was December 10th was the last time that Loyola had played a game. And this was a really good quality team. And I think the last thing that both of them, the coaches, said to each other is see in March. So these are two teams that I think are poised to make it to that NCAA tournament. Do you have any thoughts on this? Just a nice non-con game to get for Loyola.
Great win. It's going to pay off if Loyola drops one of a game they shouldn't in the Valley play. Like, I just think it steps into it, it erases a potential bad loss that could happen this year in Valley play in my mind. Also, I'm so happy this happened because SIU actually played San Francisco earlier in the non-conference season. And I, you know, getting to see San Francisco, you know, play the Dogs, I was like, man, I would say the nation has been high, or sports pundits have been high on San Francisco. And I was like, I want to get Loyola. I think they will beat them. So it was one of those, like, I was excited that this game came up to get some more shine on the Valley.
A very competitive game. I mean, give San Francisco credit. I mean, this game was within points a lot of it. So, but yeah, we'll move on to Saturday, January the 8th. We did have one canceled game before we jump into the games. Drake and Indiana State did get canceled, but we will talk about Drake here in a minute as they did get a game in that day. But we started things off in Chicago with Bradley and Loyola, which Loyola got the win 78-71 in overtime. And I tell you what, wow, what a game this was. Just to give you a quick recap, first half, Loyola got in front. Pushed out to about a 7-point lead, but Bradley didn't let it get away from them. They kind of clawed their way back, hit some nice shots, went on a nice little roll going into halftime with a 4-point lead. And into the second half, at the very beginning of the half, Bradley just went on a tear. Started the half on a 17-5 run. Loyola still came back, as they always do, as you always kind of were waiting during the game. It's like Loyola's going to eventually make their run. They did. They went on the run, cutting the 16-point lead back down to 3. But give Bradley credit because they didn't blink and they didn't just like roll over once they went on that run. So it was kind of a back and forth toward the end of the game. Bradley, I think, got back up to 5 and they were just kind of playing back and forth. And Bradley was up by 4 at this point, and there was a huge and 1-3 from Lucas Williamson with about a minute and a half left in the game that tied things at 64. Chris Knight hit a shot to put Loyola up 2, but Mast, give him credit, came back down, hit a nice hook shot in the lane to tie the game, send it to overtime. There was a missed 3 by the Williamson at the end of regulation before they headed into overtime as well. But in overtime, pretty big stalemate, honestly, for the first 3 or 4 minutes of overtime. Neither team really did a lot. But it felt like the Lucas Williamson 3 in overtime was just such a dagger, even though it was like – I think it only put them up by 3 at the time. It just felt like it took the air out of the building. It was like – you were waiting for Loyola to hit that one shot to kind of put him away. And that really was what it was. Bradley couldn't answer at the other end. I think Kent missed a 3. And Loyola made their foul shots. And that was the ball game. Williamson, 20 points. It felt like every shot that he made in the second half was big. Knight and Schweiger off the bench were both in double figures. Huge game for Rink Mast. And I think I was texting you. Rink Mast is really starting to kind of start to get in that separation with the Gage Primms of the world as being one of the best bigs in the league. And he might be by the end of the season, the best big in the league. I think he's that good. Kent had a great game of 15 points. The only other thing I want to mention is Roberts really held in check, only going 2 of 13 from the field in this game, only 6 points. It was interesting that Bradley was able to, have the lead and play really well with Loyola, where Roberts really didn't play very well. But I mean, that's just a credit to the Loyola defense to have that happen. So best game of the weekend for me. Vance, your thoughts?
Yeah, only thing I'd add here is that you mentioned Williamson had 20 points. All 20 of those points were in the second half and overtime. I think that's important to note. He did not have any points in the first half. And then also, I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, Ramblers were 6 for 6 in free throws down the stretch after they got that run and, Bradley had to foul. I mean, they made them all. So huge for the Ramblers to keep it going.
It was interesting watching this game. It was like this was one of the first times we'd seen, Loyola was kind of felt a little more human.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk away, I think, more, and this is gonna sound super weird, I'm more impressed with Bradley after this game. And yeah, I think to me, Bradley has kind of, with this game, even though they lost, they've kind of elevated themselves into that conversation of, could they go win 3 games in St. Louis? You know what I mean? I don't know if you're there or not, but that's kind of where they've kind of started to get in that conversation for me, at least.
Yeah, I'm not all the way there, Baker, but I think you nailed it in the Rink Mast conversation that he's establishing himself as.
Oh man,
not first team as of right now, but like second team. I mean, I'm there. So, I mean, he's had a couple good games, or last couple outings have been awesome. So, and he's fun to watch. I went over to see him in Peoria and he's awesome to watch.
Yeah, he's got a really good game. I love seeing that outside shot that he's put together. And if he's consistently hitting some shots from the outside, when I'm talking about 3-pointers, just such a dangerous player that he becomes, because his inside game, his footwork is so good. Adding another layer to his game is just huge. And it'll be interesting to see how Bradley responds as we go through the season. But next up, we had Drake versus Evansville. This was actually a game scheduled at the last minute due to COVID. Hats off to the Valley for kind of pivoting once you knew that the Evansville Illinois State game was not able to happen and Indiana State was also going to be running into trouble. Let's put the two teams waiting on the floor together and let's knock out a game. So really smart, proactive move by the Valley. But all I can say about this game is woof. It was a tight game through the first half. Evansville got hot a little bit toward the end of the half and went on a nice little run. Led the game by 6 points at the break. And I was kind of like, is this going to be a game? Is Drake really going to drop a game to Evansville? And, you know, into the second half, Drake got on a tear. They took the lead. They kind of took control of the game. But Evansville actually climbed back into it, cutting the lead to two with about a minute and a half left. And, again, I was like, God, Drake's not going to blow this, are they? They're not going to lose Evansville. And sure enough, Givens gets fouled. That ended up being Murphy fouled out of the game at that point. He only made one or two at the line, keeping the Drake lead at one. Drake went down, Penn missed a shot. Evansville got the ball down one, and I'm like, oh, my God, Evansville's going to win this game. But they didn't. Givens and Newton both had looks, didn't get it down. Drake won the game. Really not much I want to say about this game. Tucker DeVries led the way for Drake with 15. Brody had a nice 10 points off the bench. And unlike the Missouri State game, Wilkins hit some threes, finished with 15 points. For the Aces, Newton and Givens, obviously those are the two big names for Evansville as they have been for the last 2 years, and 21 and 18 respectively. I think both teams need to burn this tape. And just if I'm Drake, I would be happy I got the win and move on. But don't love the idea that your favorite to win the conference is going on the road to Evansville and barely squeaking by.
Yep. I don't have a lot to add for this game. The only thing I'm going to sprinkle in some stuff from the coach's call, media call this past Tuesday. One thing to note is Roman Penn had 23 minutes. Kind of update on him because he has been out with an injury. It is going to be a long-term injury. So it's basically pain management at this point. So it's not something that's going to get – it's not like a sprained ankle or anything of that. It is an injury that they just have to deal with managing the pain. But 23 minutes, getting significant minutes. So I would say he's going to be a regular in the lineup from here on out. But just kind of want to give that update because I did ask Coach DeVries on that.
Oh, right on. I mean – end of the day, I think Drake's just happy. I mean, you know, we joke because Evansville obviously is the, you know, probably 10th best team in the league, but it's still a road win, Vance, if you want to look for a silver lining on this game. And, you know, as you even said, what was 11 of 17 games were decided by one possession or less. I mean, it feels like for me, you still got a road win.
Yeah. Then, I mean, you got to take that and go back to the nap. I mean, that's all you got to do. So,
no doubt. The other really big game on Saturday pitted the Northern Iowa Panthers against the Missouri State Bears. This was an awesome game as well. Saturday was awesome for Missouri Valley hoops. Big win, though, for Northern Iowa going on the road to Missouri State. Got a win in Springfield, 85-84. A.J. Green had 33 points in this game, and that was a footnote to Isaiah Mosley's 43 points. He was just electric out there. I mean, he's awesome. And I don't mean to downplay A.J. Green. 33 points, a great game. But Isaiah Mosley was just on one that day. And to give you a little recap of the game, first half it looked like kind of same old you and I. Got down early, digging themselves a hole, but fought their way back, ended the half on a run, only down by one at the half, Bears 34-33 at the break. Tight second half. I think MSU got it up to maybe, I think it was about six or seven. I don't have it in front of me, but it wasn't for very long. Eventually, A.J. Green kind of took over at the end of the game from the foul line, randomly enough. Racked up a ton of free throws. I think he was 13 of 14 from the line in this game, which is nuts. He also had a three-pointer where he got fouled by Patterson, which was I'm not going to get into that, but got fouled on a three by Patterson, which is actually number five on Patterson, which was a huge play in the game. And then he went to the line, knocked down all three. They made enough foul shots to give themselves breathing room at the end of the game. Had a 4-point lead late. Mosley ended up hitting a three with about a second to go to cut it to one, but it was just too late. And really, really good win for you and I. I mean, that's I think where we need to start, because this was kind of they had a softer schedule, I'd say, going to start those first two games in the Valley. Well, I guess second, third game, but whatever. And it was a good test for them to kind of find out what they'd be like. They got down early and fought back. I don't think either team's good on defense after watching this game. But I think this is a huge road win. You beat one of the better teams in the league. Because going into this game, Vance, we had kind of talked about it last week, is you don't want to be the team to go down to the second loss in the Missouri Valley this early. You didn't want to have your second loss. And one of these two teams were going to get it, and it happened to be the Bears.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. I mean, a road win in that top four, you know, at the beginning of the season, we kind of had that upper echelon teams, Missouri State, Drake, Loyola, and Missouri State. And so this is kind of the first time they've played each other. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's a road win for you and I, a huge road win for you and I, when it comes to, you know, a conference championship or a conference seeding. So that's my takeaway. You know, back to that stat line. I mean, AJ Green only had two threes and had 33 points. I mean, I think that's one that stuck out to me as well. I mean, you know, like I said, Mosley 43, or like you said, Mosley 43 points, not in a losing effort. Like, are you telling me like Missouri State and Isaiah Mosley would have 43 points and lost? Like, I would have no chance I would ever say that.
Yeah, no. It stinks for him because he wasted away a really great game. But I mean, you could have said the same thing about AJ Green's 33 if they'd have lost. So I'm happy Mosley did earn himself player of the week last week with, I mean, I saw some, I don't remember who on Twitter said, it might even be Harry. So hopefully I'm not giving too hard a time, but I saw someone asking who's going to be player of the week in the Valley. I'm like, who the hell else would be player of the week? Isaiah Mosley. Like, this is not a hard choice, but,
in a losing effort. And,
no kidding. But I did want to mention one thing, Carter, for you and I, and we talked about him last week. He's starting to kind of get his groove going. 16 points in this game. If he's that number two for you and I, that's big for them. Yeah. And then also disappointing prim night, only 11 points. Big game like this, he's got to give you more. So
yeah.
And anything else really to add on this game, or just a great win for Northern Iowa? I've been hard on them this year, and I think this was the. I'm not ready to say they're good yet. I haven't quite hit that point, but I'm starting to it's starting to kind of gain some momentum for me at least.
Yep. Nope.
I'm about to break it, and then I'm going to break it all down when we get to the next.
I know. It's one of those, is like, it stinks when we're breaking down two games. It's like, because you know what happened the next night, and you're like, I want to go out on the limb, but I can't go all the way out on there. But
I'm trying to take everybody through this one game, because it's like, at this moment, we were almost there on Northern Iowa, and then it's like, take one step forward and I'd take a step back, but we'll get there in a minute.
Yep.
Final game on Saturday, pitted your Southern Illinois Salukis going to Valparaiso, and your Salukis did get the victory, 63-60. Dogs hang on for a 3-point win. Vance, I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note, too, before we break down this game, of like three road teams got wins. I mean, I think that's crazy just when you think of the Valley as a whole and how good home teams have been historically. I mean, yeah. I mean, three road victories. Crazy. But anyway.
And I just said earlier in the day, by the way, I only said we'd get one, but whatever.
I know. I know. I sent out a little tweet poll, but no one thought three was going to happen. And I sure didn't. But anyway, Dogs won 63-60 at the Arc. A late first half spurt by the Salukis gave the Dogs a 10-point halftime lead, with Damask, Banks, and Coupet adding buckets in the first half. In the second half, they built out that 10-point lead to 16 with 8 minutes to go in the game. Then they pretty much messed with my blood pressure for the rest of the remaining of the game after back-to-back threes from Kevion Taylor and the Beacons. And then they went on and scored on 7 straight possessions, cutting the Salukis' lead to 2 with just under 2 minutes to play. Fortunately, good defense from the Dogs and missed shots from the Beacons as Valparaiso went 0-5 in the last 2 minutes. To note, the Salukis were 3-10 for the last 8 minutes for free throws. So, I mean, another free throw issue for the Salukis. But, hey, it's a road win in the Valley. As a Saluki fan, I couldn't be happier. Interesting, kind of historical here. You know, games between SIU and Valpo have been tight, with the last three of them have been three or more. So it's always been Valpo's one that we haven't been able to crack each other when it comes to just scouting reports. But Dogs are 2-0. They have two Valley victories, and they're both on the road. So can't be happier.
Yeah, and it was nice to see you guys get back on the floor again, especially, you know, having a little bit of a layoff there. But, you know, look, just – and I'll be straight up with I did not watch this game. I actually texted you earlier in the night. I was like, listen, I watched three games. I'm good. I'm good on game four. You got your Saluki game. But I just want to – I do want to throw it out to you, just kind of a – I mean, this is a huge game if you really want to take a step back, because these, I think, are two teams who are kind of in that mix – for, you know, those three or four seeds to avoid Thursday. And not only that, you're a team who, you know, Illinois State, who's been playing pretty well, went to Valpo and lost the game. And then you guys went there and won. So I think for you, and I think for the Salukis, I think it's a big confidence builder, especially going forward, as you know, you've shown you can win on the road. Now we just got to put it together at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to count out Valpo. I mean, we know what they did last night, as we're not trying to get too ahead of where our skis in this podcast. But beforehand, just this season, they have two comebacks of 18 points or more. So they've been down by 18 in two separate instances and have come back and won. I mean, don't count them out. So credit to Valpo. I mean,
they're a quality team.
They are. They are. They're not an easy out by any means, and they're going to fight every time. So – yeah.
No, the thing is, we even talked about it with Drake, any win on the road is going to be a good win, with Drake even winning at Evansville. So,
yeah.
I mean, Southern Illinois going to Valparaiso, I mean, I think I picked Valparaiso in that game. Like, I didn't expect you guys to win that game. Going to be a tough game for anybody to win. So, I think if you're a Southern Illinois fan, you walk away from that game pretty darn happy. Do you have anything else on the game, or are you just kind of all around just good performance, happy?
All around happy. I mean, two road wins in the Valley to start off. I mean, you can't be – I mean, good spot to be in.
Awesome. And then just to close out the weekend before we get to the next week's games, on Sunday, the January 9th, there were no games. That was the Evansville-Illinois State game that did get canceled, so I just want to at least make mention of that. So Illinois State and Indiana State both – did not play this past weekend. They did, however, finally get back on the floor, as we're going to talk about with the next set of games. But I did want to mention that was the other cancellation, where Evansville stepped in to play Drake.
Yep.
All right, Valley fans, let's get back into this. Tuesday, January the 11th, we had a nice double dip of a couple overtime games, one to double overtime, but we'll get to that second. As Indiana State traveled to Northern Iowa in the first game of the evening, Northern Iowa squeaked one out 80-74 in overtime. I'll just say this right off the top. Northern Iowa got away with one here. Indiana State was only down to seven players in this game, and they fought their tails off. This night, as in last night, if the Trees have any more depth and a little bit more in the tank, they don't lose this game. Northern Iowa's losing this game. I'm sorry. With seven players, I give Indiana State all the credit in the world. And Northern Iowa is incredibly lucky that they won this game. Indiana State jumped on them real early, controlled the flow of the game, especially in the first half, led by 8 at the break, continued good shooting in the second half, ballooned the lead all the way to 17. A thing I will give Northern Iowa credit for is they did fight back midway through the second half, got themselves back into it. But and you could tell toward the end of the second half, Indiana State was just trying to hang on for dear life. With about a minute to go, Cam Henry fouled, and that was the uh-oh moment for me. And it was like, you either get it done in regulation or you're going to lose in overtime. And that's just unfortunate for them, because they were already in foul trouble. They only had six guys left. They had another guy who ended up fouling out. They finished with the five. And once you knew this went to overtime, you knew if this went to overtime, Indiana State was dead. Green knocked down a shot toward the end of the game just to send it to overtime. And in OT, you and I, it wasn't anything really pretty. They just kind of outlasted them, came away with the win. You and I wasn't great, and you know, against a team with no depth, very fortunate to win. My man Noah Carter did have a great game, 17 points. Bourne had 14. They got the win. All I can say, that's real. The Noah Carter and Bowen Bourne, 17-14 is really all I can say positive about in Northern Iowa on this one. The Trees had an A-plus effort. They just ran out of gas. Henry and Thomas, 18 each to lead the way. Bledson had 8 and 13 boards. He had a great game. And as well as those three played, Henry, Thomas, and Bledson, you would have hoped they got the win. But I think if you polled most Northern Iowa fans, they would probably tell you they got a guilty feeling after winning this one. And but if you're a fan, you take the win and you move on. I mean,
winning you're 3-1 in the Valley. Missouri
Valley. Yeah.
Because you're 3-1.
You're 3-1, and here's the other piece to it. Did Northern Iowa steal one? 100%. Is Northern Iowa going to get one stolen from them down the road? Probably.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the Valley. I mean, they could be shorthanded another game when they play down the road at like a Valpo or something. So I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's all gonna kind of even itself out. But all I can say is hats off to Indiana State for the effort. It really stinks. We talked about it earlier about Northern Iowa, how high we were. And it was like, oh, God, are they almost there? And it's like, are we almost back around on them? And then they have a performance like this where, I'm sorry, a good team should not be – this shouldn't even be competitive.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. And, I mean, I'm going to be on the broad side of Northern Iowa. I mean, you were down 17, came back and won, and you're 3-1 in the Valley. Yeah, Noah Carter is fun to watch. Honestly, he got a little – he had a little swagger to him, which was awesome to see. But I think more, and we talked about this off air, is that this told me more about the teams that Coach Schertz are going to have at Indiana State.
Absolutely.
Seven players can go into the McLeod Center and be up by 17 on Northern Iowa and have every chance to win it in regulation and overtime and take them to overtime. Like, that is fun to me, and I'm excited for their future. That's what it told me about Indiana State.
Oh, without a doubt. And Indiana State had an awesome game. I give them all the credit in the world. I think it's a testament to Coach Schertz. And
yes,
it's gonna be a scary team. Once they get things right, they're healthy and they're ready to roll, this is not gonna be an easy out.
Let's not sleep on the fact though that Indiana State didn't have to play this game. If people don't realize it,
that's true.
They didn't have to play the game. They had under 8. 8 is the rule of like you can get it rescheduled or can't, whatever you want to call it, due to COVID. They didn't have to play the game because they did not have the number of roster players available. So, yeah, this tells me even more about Coach Schertz.
Take one for the team and get the league. Take one for the team for the league is what you kind of say on this one. I think for me this – and I know you – the one thing I think it says about Northern Iowa, we're just not back yet. I mean, we're not there yet. It's mm-hmm. This is the kind of performance that, like we said, take one step forward, you take one step back, and it was you know, great effort in the second half to get back into the game, but that you should never have put yourself in that position against 7 guys.
Yep.
If I was a Northern Iowa fan, I'd be incredibly frustrated and like kind of like have that gut feeling in my stomach. Like, God, we just beat 7 guys who played their tails off and we shouldn't have won this game. But at the end of the day, this does take them to 4-1 in the league, which is really the most important part of this is, I mean, they're right there at the top of the league, which is huge for them. So they did get the win, and we can't take that away from them. But just kind of an interesting game, and, you know, it'll be interesting for me to see where these two teams go from here. Do you have any other thoughts on this one, or do you want to move to the next one?
No, let's move on. I do need to correct myself. I think I said 3-1. It's because I had my notes open from the last game. So, yeah, you're exactly right. They're 4-1 in the Missouri Valley, and that is the biggest thing to take away. You won.
Yeah, absolutely. And give them credit for getting the job done, making their free throws and overtime and whatnot. So as we move on to the probably the second best game and the second best game this week for Valley fans, Loyola, another home win. This one in overtime again. Had to take two overtimes to beat Valparaiso, 81-74. This was a game that I'll kind of run through the quick recap for you. Valpo controlled this game from tip as another sluggish start for Loyola, but in the second half, they kind of planted their feet and got that, you know, that patented Loyola run where they get themselves back into a ball game. it felt like this comeback took a little longer than a few of the old other ones that you've seen over the years from Loyola. But a few costly turnovers at the end of the game. And I think that was the story at the end of the game for Valpo, was they just they could not stop turning the ball over. And
inbound it.
They couldn't inbound it. I think they had two inbounded turnovers. And here's the thing. Loyola's defense is elite in the country. Let's get the ball inbound, folks. I mean, that's kind of inexcusable to have that many plays. But end of the game, Loyola finally tied it up at 55. Valpo did not get a great look as we went into overtime. In the first OT, back and forth, just momentum shot after momentum shot. Williamson hit a shot. Rudinger had a big shot. He had a big game, by the way. He was awesome out there. Who doesn't get a lot of play, but hats off to him. But down three, under a minute to go, Braden Norris stepped up and just buried a big three. And it was like, whew, that was a huge, huge, just stepped up, nailed it. Kobe King was not – I don't think he got a very good look at the end of the second over – or the end of the first overtime. And it took us into the second OT. In the second extra session, Braden Norris literally took over the game. He had three big threes in the second OT, and he kind of just like slowly put Valpo away. And it just felt like each three just took another part of their soul. And it was like he'd hit a three, and it kept taking air out of Valpo. It was a nice – Loyola made the free throws at the end of the game, took care of business, 7-point win for them. Player of the game in this one was Norris, no question about it, who was just absolutely on fire in overtime, 23 points for the night. For the Beacons, Taylor had 17, Kobe King with 18 off, and then Edwards off the bench with 20. And Edwards' shots were just huge every time. He was able to just kind of step. And that's been Edwards' MO for the last couple of years. He's been one of those guys. And I even remember back last year to the overtime game they have at Bradley, where he just would hit the biggest shots of the game. And that is a guy who is not afraid of the moment. And so hats off to him. And Valpo, just another close loss, though, for them. And Loyola, the best team in the league, took care of business in a close game against a team they should.
They did. Just a couple items here. Loyola did not lead in regulation, which is wild to think about. And then also Braden Norris, I mean, back to his 23 points, game high. 14 of those 23 came in the two overtime periods, which is crazy as well. So I'm with you. Everything you said about Sheldon Edwards, I thought as well. He had a couple threes from the top of the key that were huge. Momentum keepers, not changers. It kept the momentum with Valpo late in that game. So really playing into his role down the stretch.
It was interesting. I think it was in first overtime where Loyola had hit a shot, get up two, and then Edwards come back with a three and get the lead right back for Valpo. They didn't blink. They didn't go away, and credits them, gets to a second overtime. But, Valpo is – they're going to need to win some of these games at some point. And I know I don't want to dog these guys because I think they do have a lot of talent, and I think they're a dangerous team. But they're going to have to win some of these, and that's going to be the tough thing for them to kind of turn the page and, try to win the next game. And as we see in the Valley, every game's tough. But my question for you, Vance, is – do you feel the same about Loyola after these last two overtime games as you did going into this week?
Yeah, Vance definitely got brought down to earth because I would say I was super high on Loyola. But I'm still trying to put my thumb on if it's a Loyola thing or is it just the Valley thing. And what I mean by that is the San Francisco win still resonates with me because when you think of Loyola and what they could do from the national landscape of a team that's very highly thought of, at the end of the day, they're winning. So I'm not – am I down a peg? Yes. But do I still think they're the best team in the league? Yes.
So I think they're still the best team in the league. And I know that'll spoil my power rankings a little bit. But here's the thing. I it's kind of a twofold for me. If you look at the Valpo game, I don't think Loyola played well. I look at the Bradley game. I think Bradley played really well.
Yeah.
I think that the first game was more Bradley played. Finally was, it felt like even though they didn't have Jayshon Henry in that game, but they were finally starting to get it together. And it was kind of starting to play that complete game. You saw Mass have a great game. And this is not a disrespect against Valpo, because Valpo played well last night, but Loyola played bad. Mm-hmm. They came out flat in this game last night. So do I think that this is any indication on them not winning the league? No. I still think that they're the favorite to win the league for a reason. I think they're a top 25 team. But it also, I think, leaves them open. If they have a night like this and, you know, a Northern Iowa comes and play and shooting the ball well, if Missouri State has Mosley or Prim plays well, Loyola doesn't bring their good effort, they're going to lose. And this isn't going to be one of those 18-0 seasons, I don't think. And I think that we saw that this week.
Couldn't agree more.
January the 12th, Wednesday night, we had a couple of games here tonight. Three games to be precise. Bradley got a win at home, 79-47 over Evansville. Beat down for the Bradley Braves. Looked like they controlled this game just from start to finish, about midway through the first half. Kind of took over the game, and they didn't really look back. Not a close game. Really great showing for the Braves. Ring Mass tearing it up out there, 23-13 for Bradley. Roberts back on the you know, good game after the, you know, kind of a slower game from him against Loyola. He had 19-10 on the night. And you know what? I think this just shows those are the two guys that get things rolling for Bradley this year. They're going to be a really tough out. And it was nice to see after they had such a really good game that they played on Saturday, they were able to get the win here against Evansville. Real quick, Newton and Givens, 16 apiece. They're obviously going to have the bulk of the scoring for the Purple Aces, but really a beatdown tonight for Bradley Braves. Got any thoughts on this one, Vance?
I mean, Evansville shot terribly. They were 29% from the field, 24% from three. I think we just know with stats like that, Evansville's not going to win a game or win a game when they shoot like that. For me, Bradley, I'm glad to see Terry Roberts back in the box score with significant numbers. But one player who was creeping up on my radar was Leones for Bradley. He was 3 of 3 from 3-point. He added 9 points. Yeah. He was big in that game against Missouri State that I got to see in person. But he's one just a role player for Bradley that I enjoy watching, and he can creep up and have a game-high night for the Braves.
Yeah, another game missed for Jayshon Henry as well. You worry about the concussions and the head injuries that he's had this season. And, I mean, listen, there's nothing really to say about this. Just hope he gets back on the floor, does what's best for him. I mean, you hear different random reports about him out there. I'm not going to speculate on a college athlete what's going on with that injury. So, hopefully we see him out there again. But I think the timetable is just TBD for him. But nevertheless, Bradley got the win. Huge win for them over Evansville. Like I said, they had kind of had that sluggish – not sluggish, I guess, but they were in these games, but they lost these games. I mean, they could have easily been 3-1, you know, who knows if they win that Indiana State game, maybe even 4-0. So it was good that they were able to get this win, get themselves to 2-3 in the league. Hopefully, you know, for their sake, they can get back to 500, but not this next weekend, but down the line as well. So moving on, we'll move on to my Redbirds playing on the road at Drake in Des Moines. 86-75 is the final. Redbirds lose to the Drake Bulldogs in this one. Birds, I felt like the Birds fought really hard in this game. They were never really out of it. Had a lead early on, and once Drake took the lead in this game, it felt like they never gave it up. But the Birds just the whole time kind of fought through it and just kind of hung around all game long. Even when Drake kind of extended it out and got it up to about 9 in the beginning of the second half, Birds fought back, got it back down to, I think, maybe back down to 3 or 4. But you know, middle of the second half, Drake extended it out to about 10. And from that point on, we really knew that this game was over. Overall, I guess, if I just want to look at the quick look at the statistics, because this game just did go final. Tucker DeVries, which we'll get to a second about his injury, he had 16 points to lead the way. Him and Roman Penbull, 16 for the Drake Bulldogs. Murphy had 10. Wilkins had 11. Sturts off the bench, who I personally am – I think he's one of the best players on Drake. He had himself a nice 12-point night. For the Birds, Kendall Lewis, a really nice game for him, 20 points. Reeves had 15, not as high a point total as him. And I know you see a 15-point game, you think it's, you know, that's a good game for Reeves. Not compared to what he's been doing. It's a little slower of a night. Strong was 12 points. Chapman off the bench, who had to come off the bench, only had 14. Redbirds only played 7 guys tonight. Really tough, tall order to go to Des Moines and play 7 guys and try to stay in the game, especially without your 2-point guards, Fleming and Freeman. End of the day, I think it's just one of those things that Drake took care of business. They handled their business at home, even though Illinois State did fight back and they made it tough on them. Drake handled their business, and at the end of the day, I think a win's a win for them. I kind of look at this game compared to the Northern Iowa game from last night, and I think to myself, you know, Drake felt more like they were a little more convincing and handled their business a little better. Before I get to your quick thoughts on this one, I do want to mention Tucker DeVries did go down at the end of the game. We actually talked to a friend of ours who was at the game, and he had said he was kind of walking around, but he looked to still be in a lot of pain. I think he's holding his ankle when he went down. So let's hope that it's nothing too serious. But when you see something like that, you immediately think, you know, maybe high ankle sprain, something like that. So Vance, do you have any thoughts on this game? I mean, a win's a win for Drake. And I think for Drake going forward, we just kind of let's find out what's wrong with Tucker.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, Drake's, you protect home and you get a win against Illinois State. I really don't have a ton to add to this because I didn't get to watch any of this because I was dialed into my salutes.
Yep, and that's where we're going to head next to Springfield, Missouri, where the Southern Illinois Salukis just finished up playing against the Bears. The Bears got the win 81-76. Bears bouncing back after the loss to Northern Iowa over the weekend, beating a good, tough Southern Illinois team. Vance, floor is yours. I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, as you just mentioned, game just went final, 81-76. This was a very good first opening 10 minutes for the Salukis. Got out to a 7-point lead. It's something that the Salukis, you've heard me say on this podcast, we've been spotting teams 10 points here and there, or we dig ourselves a hole and we have to just – it's a dogfight the rest of the game. So I was really happy to see just kind of balanced scoring attack for the Salukis, you know, in the first part of the first half. The Bears did come back, and then kind of in the last 10 minutes it was a back-and-forth battle. Before we went to halftime, and Missouri State had a 2-point halftime lead. In the second half, in my mind, just Missouri State got it out to about a 5-8-point lead and just kind of kept the Salukis at arm's length for the second half. Salukis really just couldn't get in front again. But, I mean, up down until the very end, you know, there's a minute to go, and, you know, I had a chance to tie the game. You know, they were down 3, just weren't able to hit the shot. And, you know, they go to Springfield and leave with a loss. For Missouri State, Isaiah Mosley, you know, he's continuing his potential player of the year candidacy. He had 33 points. Also, Donovan Clay had 13. Gage Prim had 12. That was a pretty quiet 12. He wasn't as big of a factor in the first half. Ultimately, I think the Salukis played good D on him. For the Salukis, as a Saluki fan, I am just happy to see a balanced scoring effort. It's not just Lance Jones or just Damask in the box score. Damask did have 20. Verplanken had 16. Verplanken and Kuphead had 16. Lance Jones had 10. Muya had a struggle of a game. He didn't score. Had a couple of rebounds and fouled out. So tough game here, but I think he was drawing a lot of the prim battle. So no surprise there. Just want to see a little bit more offense out of him. But ultimately, you know, bummed going to Springfield, having a chance to win. Played well, in my opinion, against a very good Missouri State team. And, you know, once again, Isaiah Mosley goes off for 30 and the Bears win.
Yeah, a couple things for me on this one. I wasn't able to watch this game, obviously, because you and I kind of took our own team to watch. So, but just kind of my outsider's perspective on this. Number one, if you're Southern Illinois and you went into this week, you knew you had 2 road games after a layoff. You were going to Valpo and you were going to Missouri State. And if you were going to walk away 1-1, you're going to take it.
Yep.
And I know it's disappointing and it's fresh for you right now. But I think Saluki fans, if you look back at this in a couple of days, you're like, you know what, hey – it wasn't a disaster. 1-1, two close games, could have gone either way. So it's good at least we got one. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or
no, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think that's well said. I was hoping kind of for a split. You know, selfishly, right. We wanted to go 2-0, but two road games and get a split, you know, you're happy. For me, it's just more of we had opportunities and we just kind of get stuck on offense every once in a while. There was a couple times in the second half that, you know, we went 2 or 3 minutes without scoring. So, I mean, hats off to Missouri State's defense. They're pretty decent defensively. But, yeah, 1-1, two road games, you know, it could be worse.
Yeah, and coming off the weekend where defense was not played very hard, it didn't feel like, in that Northern Iowa game. So,
yeah.
It was good to see Missouri State. It sounds like they played a good defensive game. And I guess for Missouri State, a couple quick things for me. Prim had that – he had 12-6. Feels like that we're – that it's bubbling. We're waiting. There's going to be the big yeah. Prim game coming. The big Prim game's coming. But I'm going to pose a question to you on the spot here. Is Isaiah Mosley the front runner right now for player of the year?
Absolutely. I mean, I just don't know what other stats are out there that you can make an argument against, unless Missouri State finishes ninth. That would be the argument, you know?
Yeah. I agree. I think some of these performances, I mean, if you're going to look point for point, I mean, he's having these big performances. I mean, AJ Green's had some good big games, but I mean, he's not – these Mosley games have been crazy over the last couple of nights. So, that's been the games that were for Missouri Valley Conference play, and that will take us right into our power rankings. And for the power rankings, we're I like to do a little bit of a theme when we do these power rankings, and this time we're going to go with toys. And more specifically, childhood toys, especially for me. So, you know, bear with me. Here we go. Starting off at number one in the power rankings this week, I have Loyola Ramblers. And the Loyola Ramblers, you know, two gutsy efforts. They're the elite team in the league. And the elite toy are Legos. Anytime you get Legos, it doesn't matter what you're building. It's always quality. You know what? Sometimes you have challenges, just like anytime you open a box of Legos. But you know, it's still the top dog on the toy shelves every time. And you walk down those toy aisles and you see Legos for days. So Loyola are the Legos. They're the name brand here in the Valley. So they're the number one team. And here comes a surprise that I think a lot of people have been wondering if it ever happened. Number two, I'm going to go with the Northern Iowa Panthers. And I, even after the Indiana State game, I didn't want to, but I mean, let's face it, they won 4 in a row. It's hard not to be hot like they are. The toy that I'm going to compare them to is the PlayStation 1, which is a gaming console that's near and dear to my heart from back in the day. Always loved firing up the PS1. But you know what? There's always some issues because sometimes you always had to deal with, you know, that pain of them where they would it'd take forever to load a game. And you put in a disc and it take 10 minutes to just get to the game. And Northern Iowa just feels like that for me. They're that team that, you know, it's a great thing to play. You love them out there, but you know, there's always just something wrong and you're just, it's never, there's an incomplete time. And with Northern Iowa, I'm not all the way there yet. So
I like it.
That's kind of why I give them the old PS1. Number three on the list, I was torn, by the way, on 2 through 5 here, by the way. So you can argue big time. I'm going to go with your Southern Illinois Salukis, though, because I think the win on the road at Valpo was pretty darn impressive for me. And almost winning tonight at Missouri State, giving a good showing, I think is enough for me. Southern Illinois is the Nerf gun of the Missouri yes. Valley Conference. Great defense against your siblings, but if you get aggressive and try to get on offense, it might get you in a little bit of trouble. So that's why I put the Southern Illinois Salukis as the Nerf gun of the league, but number three on my list this week. And like I said, 2 through 5 is really tough. You can go either way. Number four, I'm going to go with the Drake Bulldogs. They got two wins against Illinois State and Evansville. They're 2-0 this week, but there's not much else good to say. It wasn't as you would have hoped you'd had an easier game, one of those two, but you didn't. But Drake is the Game Boy of the Missouri Valley Conference. And with things almost unraveling in Evansville, this is why I called him the Game Boy. It's a great toy. It's clutch on road trips. But toward the end, you just hope the batteries don't run out. And just this past weekend when they went to Evansville, the batteries almost ran out on them. So Drake is the Game Boy of the league. At number five, I have Missouri State. really disappointing loss against Northern Iowa for me, but I'm going to compare them. Or I'm going to call them the Super Soaker of the Missouri Valley. It's a great toy, as Missouri State's a great team in the Missouri Valley. But you know what? They're just a Super Soaker is not always in the rotation because of weather and different things. And Missouri State, as good as they are, aren't always in the mix in that top mix because they have their days where, like a Super Soaker is just not getting played with. They have their days where they're just having a little time off. So that wraps up the top five. As we go to number six, this might be the one that people are going to get really mad at. I have the Bradley Braves. I was insanely impressed with their game at Loyola. I thought they played an awesome game, deserved to win it, quite frankly. And they just beat down Evansville. I think that they're starting to gain some momentum. I get a little worried about them because, you know, in the past few years, Wardle teams have started the season slow. And I think with Bradley, that was what I was getting afraid of. But as for a toy, I'm going to call them the Tamagotchi Watch of the Missouri Valley. And here's what I'll say about them. Tamagotchi watches are good for a weekend and that's about it. And that's what the Bradley Braves are. They're good for a weekend and that's about it. Let's move on to number seven. And this was a tough one I went back and forth on. I'm going to go with the Indiana State Sycamores. I was between them and Illinois State, honestly, on this one, but I have to go Indiana State just because of the effort that they put in and Cedar Falls this week. I even feel guilty putting them at seven. I think they deserve almost to be higher, but a lot of good teams in the league. They are the Clue of the Missouri Valley, the game Clue. The reason is it's a legendary game as a kid. And it's, you know, it's got the brand name. Clue is such a brand name out there in the gaming world, but they've gone through a lot of spinoffs and some rebrands over the last few years. And those rebrands are just not good enough. So shout out to the rebrand of Indiana State's logo, which you know how I feel about that. Number eight, I have Illinois State. Obviously only played the one game, shorthanded as they were, played at Drake, really good effort. They're kind of a wait and see team in the Valley. We don't know what they're going to be once they have a full complement of their players. They're actually playing consistent games. So, you know, they had that big game against Wisconsin a few weeks ago where they took them to the wire, and I think they're going to be okay. And they're probably going to be better toward the end of the year, but it's hard to put them any higher right now. Illinois State is the Play-Doh of the Missouri Valley Conference. And here we go. You remember loving it a long time ago and how it was one of the top dogs as a kid. But those containers have dried out for two decades. Moving on to number nine. Valparaiso. Valparaiso, I feel bad putting you at number nine. I really do. Because you had a two tough losses. But two games you lost. And, you know, it's just where we're at. Valparaiso is the Pickup Pete of the Missouri Valley, which is a newer game. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Pickup Pete. It's actually a game that my son wanted really bad, but I'm going to say that Valpo had high expectations when they were sitting there on the shelf, like Pickup Pete did, where you saw the box, you thought, oh, what a great game. Had some high expectations when they were in the Horizon League, winning conferences every year. But then you brought it home, and it's been kind of a mixed bag. And it kind of leaves you disappointed in Pickup Pete. And any parents out there who bought their kid Pickup Pete know what I'm talking about, the two of you listening right now. finally, at number 10, we have the Evansville Purple Aces. And the Evansville Purple Aces, to me, are the rock tumbler of the Missouri Valley Conference. Looks like it could be promising, but it just never is. That wraps up my power rankings. I'm going to recap them real quick. Vance, give you a chance to give your thoughts. Number one, Loyola. Number two, Northern Iowa. Number three, Southern Illinois. Number four, Drake. Number five, Missouri State. Number six, Bradley. Number seven, Indiana State. Number eight, Illinois State. Number nine, Valparaiso. Number 10, Evansville. Vance, do you have any thoughts?
One, I love the theme this time. Maybe insight into the listener for the listeners is Baker sometimes will just text me one of them, and he texted me the Illinois State one, and I laughed out loud, like literally. Not just the LOL when texting, but then I laughed again.
I think it's easier to make fun of your own team, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. And then you even said Illinois State and I kind of forgotten. And then I just laughed again to myself, chuckled to myself. So that one was hilarious. Okay. Taking the toys aside. One, I was Googling Pickup Pete as you were talking through it, cause I have no idea what that is. But anyway,
not good.
Not good. I think SIU is overvalued, Baker, and I
okay.
I mean, it pains me to say that, but I do feel they're overvalued. I think Bradley is undervalued just with one, the dominating win, and then also going to Loyola and putting him on the ropes. You know, I think you can probably make the same argument for Valpo as well, but at the end of the day, Valpo is 0-2, Bradley's 1-1. So those are the only ones that I would say, like, point in time power ranking, that's where I kind of will pick my battles with your 10 teams, but love the toys. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, it was hard for me, especially with Bradley, because I didn't want to rank them too high because they're 2-3 in the league. One of their wins is against Evansville, which at home against Evansville, that's one of the lowest quality wins you can have. And, you know, they hadn't gotten it done, so it's kind of hard to put them as high as I wanted to. And Drake and Missouri State were just so hard for me because the highest of high expectations. But it's like I don't want to put them too low because I know how good they are. Mosley had a great weekend. But, you know, Drake playing 2-0, and I'm still kind of – you know, I just kind of feel empty a little bit with them. And Missouri State, you know, lost that game against Northern Iowa and still have two losses in the league. So, no, I appreciate the feedback. And, you know, we'll bring back the power rankings probably next week with another edition. And those of you out there who, if you have any good ideas for the power rankings of suggestions for themes that I could go with to kind of compare the Missouri Valley teams, I'd love to hear from you. MarchArchMailbag@gmail.com is where you can find us online, or at March Arch Pod, at March Arch Baker. Also, if you have some good ideas for some themes for the power rankings going forward, I'd love to hear them. I've got a couple in the bag that I've been kind of saving for a little while that I think are going to be kind of fun. But definitely, and then send us your power rankings as well. If you think I'm a complete idiot for having Northern Iowa second, then let me know.
All right, Valley fans, let's look ahead at what's to come on the Missouri Valley slate. We're going to start off on Saturday, January 15th. We've got three games on the slate, one of which is going to be on ESPNU, and that is Missouri State at Valparaiso. Baker, do the Beacons get a win after going 0-2 this week?
I think they do. I think they got to get one, right? They're due. But, man, this is going to be a game both teams cannot afford to lose. You have a Missouri State team going in 2-3, a team that was going to contend for the top of the league, and Valpo, who's desperate for a win.
This has been a tough slate. I mean, SIU at home, going the road to Loyola, and now you have Missouri State at home. Like, this is a tough little stretch for them. It's one of – like, I feel like I just got to – like, Valpo's due. So, you know what? I'll pick Valpo with you.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to the Holman Center, the recently renovated, so Valley fans get there and check it out. Loyola is going to the Holman Center to take on the Sycamores of Indiana State. I think Loyola keeps it rolling.
Yeah, I think so too. It'll be interesting to see what Indiana State's like. I mean, they wasted the gas tank the other night against Northern Iowa, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when the Ramblers head into town, but I agree with you. I think the Ramblers get it done.
That one will be on CBS Sports Network. Also, intriguing matchup for me, and I think around the Valley, is Northern Iowa at the Southern Illinois Salukis. Panthers going to the Banterra Center. Baker, what do you think? It's painful. It looks painful.
Southern Illinois. It's a clash of styles. I mean, you got a defensive team against an offensive team. One team doesn't play defense. One team struggles on offense.
I like what I'm seeing from the Salukis. I know they just lost tonight to Missouri State, but they didn't spot them the 10. And I know I've just been harping on that, but it pains me. And I really like this team. So I'm going to go with Salukis.
I would pick whoever's at home in this one, if I'm being honest.
Yep. All right, let's move on to Sunday the 16th, the War on 74. This time it is coming to Normal, Illinois. Redburn Arena will be ready to go as the Bradley Braves play the Illinois State Redbirds.
Birds by a million.
I mean, you can't pick anything else. I'm going to go with Bradley. I think Bradley's trending upward, so I'm going with the Braves.
I mean, you're going to be wrong, but whatever.
No, totally fine. This is, I believe, a rescheduled game. Monday, January 17th, the Drake Bulldogs will be going to the Banterra Center and playing the Southern Illinois Salukis.
We'll pick the Dogs.
Which one?
This is just a joke. I'm picking Southern Illinois in this game. I think I think the Salukis get it done. I don't love seeing the fact that Tucker DeVries looks like he's hurt, so I'm assuming he's not going to play in this game, and that's going to be a tough road trip for Drake, and this could be two big wins against the state of Iowa at home for Salukis. But, yes, I'm going to go with Southern Illinois.
I'm going to go with them as well. I really like the matchup here. I don't know why. I mean, for all I know, now Brody is going to go off for, you know, 25 or 30. But I like the way the Salukis match up with Drake. So we'll move on to Tuesday the 18th, where Loyola will be heading to Evansville. And I believe they will keep it rolling as well.
Yeah, they're not losing at Evansville.
And now we have a big slate on Wednesday the 19th. We have four games on the slate, all on ESPN+. Northern Iowa is going to Valparaiso.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one.
Is it safe to say, Baker, that this
Valparaiso.
Is
one of those? Okay. Valparaiso. I flip a coin. Come on, flip a coin on this one. Valparaiso, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, if Northern Iowa goes 2-0 in this stretch, that's a huge.
They're back.
They're 100% back. That's why yeah. It's more of if you don't think they're going to win at Southern, then okay, they might drop this one. I think they're going 1-1 over this 2-game stretch.
I would agree. But yeah, give me Valpo.
Southern Illinois will be hosting the Indiana State Sycamores.
I think you guys are 3-0 in these games. I when like we come back.
Baker, are you high on the Salukis right now? You got them power ranking 3, and now you're saying 3-0?
Hey, you know what? You got to shoot your shot every once in a while. But, yes, I think Southern Illinois gets it done at home against Indiana State. And if you can win these three home games, look out.
And then Missouri State will be hosting your Redbirds.
Oh, God, I want to pick my Birds so bad, but it's really hard for me to think that – they're going to go 2-0 against Missouri State this year. They got the win at home at RBA. I don't think the Redbirds get it done when they head to Springfield.
I will pick the Bears as well. And then Drake will be hosting the Bradley Braves.
This one is going to be a really fun matchup. I think that Drake is incredibly vulnerable going into this game. If I know for sure Tucker DeVries is out of this game, I'm inclined to pick Bradley. Which I'm going to do. I'm going to pick Bradley to beat Drake on the road. I don't love doing that, but I think if Tucker DeVries is out, this is because you don't know Tank Hemphill's status for this game either. Yeah, I'm going to go Bradley.
Yeah, important to note, if both Southern and Drake, they're going to be playing two games in 3 days just with the rescheduling madness going on here. So just something to look for or look out towards that some of these games might be closer just due to legs. I know last year, obviously, they were playing back-to-back, but just something different this year.
You know what? And we talked about that earlier, though, is like because when we were talking about Indiana State and how they went to – they only played 7 guys against Northern Iowa. Illinois State just played 7 guys against Drake tonight. It's going to be – this is going to happen to everybody. Everybody's yep. going to go through this. At least some kind of adversity. I mean, look at Loyola. They didn't play a game for a month.
Right.
I mean, everybody's going to have their own issues. So, you just got to play through it. And for some of these teams like Drake and Southern Illinois, this is going to be a tough little stretch for them with all these games kind of in the next week. So, not a good time, obviously, for – Tucker DeVries go down, which we hope for the best for him and hope he's back on the floor. But Vance, to me, that's the game I think that I'm most intrigued by because I want to know what Drake is at the end of the week, the next week of basketball, what's left of Drake, and what Bradley's looking at going to that game.
Yep, nope, good take there. And another awesome week of Valley Hoops ahead of us.
Isn't it so much fun to look at these conference games?
And, I mean, I'm going back to that stat of the 17 games that have been played, 11 have been, I mean, so close. I mean, it is just – it's been an awesome week of games, and we've got even better ones coming. But to follow along throughout the next week, you can check us out on March Arch Pod on Twitter, and then Baker is March Arch Baker.
Real quick before we close it out, shout out to my nephew Nolan for calling in the middle of the podcast. Thank you for my phone ringing midway through our conversation with Vance. So hats off to you, buddy. But yeah, you can find us at March Arch ArchPod at March Arch Baker on Twitter, MarchArchMailbag@gmail.com. Is where you guys can find us. Give us feedback on anything you see. Love interacting with all you folks online, and appreciate you listening. And welcome to the Missouri Valley Conference, to the Murray State Racers, as hopefully we gained a few new listeners out there from Murray State with Kevin on the show. Thank you so much for Murray State. You guys were awesome hooking that up for us, so we appreciate it. And, yeah, looking forward to the week of hoops.
And with that, go Valley.